Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we feature a special report on the signing of the bilateral security agreement between the United States and Afghanistan. U.S. officials are calling the agreement an important step in strengthening the strategic partnership between the two countries. As we hear from Bob Doty, the signing comes just 3 months before U.S. and NATO forces are set to officially end military operations in Afghanistan.
The International Security Assistance Force has been active in Afghanistan for 13 years. The force, known as ISAF, resulted from the 2001 terrorist attacks against the United States. ISAF operations are supposed to end on December 31st. Under the new agreement, the United States and NATO are expected to keep a smaller force in Afghanistan. John Podesta is an advisor to President Barack Obama. He welcomed the measure's approval.
The bilateral security agreement provides the legal framework for the United States to continue to train, advise, and assist Afghan national security forces so terrorists can never use Afghanistan to launch attacks against the U.S. or its allies. The continuation of our security partnership will help Afghanistan preserve its progress in education, healthcare, human rights, and economic opportunity.
U.S. and Afghan officials opened talks on the security agreement in November of 2012. Their stated goal was to have a treaty ready by May of 2013. But negotiations with former President Hamid Karzai proved difficult. He refused to sign the agreement, leaving his replacement to do so. Afghanistan's election process delayed the signing even more. Arturo Munoz studies South Asian issues for the RAND Corporation, a not-for-profit policy group. He says one issue the negotiators faced was defining the work of the force in future combat operations.
People were adamant for years that it would not have a combat role, but their main mission would be to support the Afghan army, the Afghan armed forces, and provide them with additional training, with advice. One big unresolved question was that this stay-behind force would include a commando element that would continue to do raids against suspected terrorists. For the Afghans, this was a hot-button issue. Foreign troops breaking down the doors of Afghan homes at night to do raids against suspected terrorists. The accusation was that a lot of times the intelligence wasn't good and they broke into the wrong house.
He says the solution was to place members of the U.S. NATO force with Afghan security forces. In addition, the Afghan forces are to take the lead in any such operation. The Obama administration says the new, smaller force will have two goals: training Afghan forces and carrying out anti-terrorism operations against Al-Qaeda supporters. Administration officials say the U.S. will reduce its military presence by about half at the end of 2015. By the end of 2016, the military will only guard the U.S. Embassy in Kabul while providing equipment and advice to the Afghans.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English.
Now you can tear a building down, but you can't erase a memory. These houses may look torn down, but they have.
Here again is Bob Doty with more on the bilateral security agreement.
The United States is expected to keep about 9,800 members of its armed forces in Afghanistan after 2014. On Monday, State Department official Jen Psaki was asked if a force of this size will be able to successfully help Afghan forces neutralize the Taliban.
There's a training component of this that has been ongoing. And as you know, Afghans have been in the lead, and we are continuing to implement that in the months ahead. We are felt committed and felt so strongly about moving forward, of course, with a conclusion of this political situation as well as the signing of a BSA, so we can continue to have that partnership. Obviously, it has to be implemented, and we need to continue to work closely together to achieve a successful outcome.
Arturo Munoz says the continued presence of NATO and U.S. troops is important for more than just military purposes.
Not only in terms of the military advice and training, which is their main function, but the fact that they're there also gives assurance to all the Western donors that are contributing money to the Afghan government that there's going to be stability and that Afghanistan is not going to adopt an anti-Western position, kind of like Iraq did. So the Afghans want to show we're not Iraq, we're different.
Jonah Blank works for the RAND Corporation. He says the U.S.-NATO force remains important because of the fight against al-Qaeda and the Taliban.
The fact that the U.S. and other partner nations will be present doesn't suggest that this is going to be an easy fight. This year, the Taliban killed more Afghan soldiers and police than it has in any year since it fell from power. And there are no signs that it is easing up.
Jonah Blank says the real test for the U.S.-NATO force is whether it can help Afghan security forces keep the country from becoming an ungoverned space again. The Taliban, he says, were bad not just for the international community, but for the Afghan people. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to join us tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. The head of the security force guarding the President of the United States resigned this week. Secret Service Director Julia Pearson offered her resignation on Wednesday, a day after she faced a United States congressional committee. Committee members spoke with her at length about an incident 2 weeks ago at the White House. They wanted to know how a man was able to jump over a fence and get deep inside the presidential home. President Barack Obama and his family were not in the building at the time. The Secret Service has said the suspect, Omar Gonzalez, was arrested just inside the main entrance to the White House. Officials at first said he was unarmed, but it was later learned he was carrying a knife. Omar Gonzalez formerly served in the U.S. military. He is now 42 years old and homeless, having no permanent place to live. On Tuesday, members of Congress sharply questioned Julia Pearson. She admitted that the Secret Service had made missteps.
It's clear that our security plan was not properly executed. This is unacceptable, and I take full responsibility, and I will make sure that it does not happen again.
She was also asked about another incident. In 2011, gunfire hit the White House. But it took days for the Secret Service to discover that the building had been hit. Several lawmakers blamed Ms. Pearson for sending mixed signals about whether agents could use deadly force if they felt the president is in danger. Some said the height of the White House fence was not the problem. They noted that several levels of security failed to stop the fence jumper until he had crossed the grounds, opened the door, and run through the main floor of the White House. Hours after the committee hearing, news media began reporting about another security breach. It involved an armed security guard with a criminal record. He reportedly stood just centimeters from President Obama last month. The incident took place during the president's visit to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia. A presidential spokesman told reporters that Mr. Obama learned of the incident shortly before it was made public. Spokesman Josh Earnest said the president continues to have complete trust in the Secret Service. He said Mr. Obama accepted Ms. Pearson's resignation because he agreed with her judgment that it was in the best interest of the agency.
They reached that conclusion because of the recent and accumulating reports about the performance of the agency, and that is what led the president to believe that new leadership is required.
The press secretary said President Obama spoke by telephone to Ms. Pearson and expressed thanks for her 30 years with the Secret Service. A short time later, Homeland Security Director Jay Johnson announced her replacement. He is Joseph Clancy, a former Secret Service special agent. In a statement, Mr. Johnson noted how Secret Service agents protected the president and 140 visiting heads of state without incident last weekend. They were in New York for the United Nations General Assembly. Mr. Johnson added that no other protection service in the world could have done this. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. story today is called A Piece of Red Calico. It was written by Frank Stockton. Stockton was a popular writer in the second half of the 19th century. He wrote a large number of stories for children and other stories for adults. His most famous work, The Lady or the Tiger, can also be heard in VOA Special English. Now, here is Steve Ember with Frank Stockton's A Piece of Red Calico.
I was going to town one morning when my wife gave me a little piece of red calico cloth. She asked me if I would have time during the day to buy her 2.5 meters of calico cloth like that. I told her that it would be no trouble at all. Putting the piece of brightly colored cloth in my pocket, I took the train to the city. During the day, I stopped in at a large store. I saw a man walking the floor and asked him where I could see some red calico. "This way, sir," and he led me up the store. "Miss Stone," said he to a young woman, "show this gentleman some red calico." "What kind of red do you want?" asked Miss Stone. I showed her the little piece of calico cloth that my wife had given me. She looked at it and gave it back to me. Then she took down a great roll of cloth and spread it out on the counter. "Why, that isn't the right kind of red," said I. "No, not exactly," said she, "but it looks nicer than your sample." "That may be," said I, "but you see, I want it to look like this piece. There is something already made of this kind of calico which needs to be enlarged or fixed or something. I want some calico of the same shade." The girl made no answer but took down another roll of cloth. "That's the right color," said she. "Yes," I answered, "but it is striped." "Stripes are worn more than anything else in calicos," said she. "Yes, but this isn't to be worn," I said. "It's for a piece of furniture, I think. At any rate, I want perfectly plain material to go with something already in use." "Well, I don't think you can find it perfectly plain unless you get turkey red," she said. "What is turkey red?" I asked. "Turkey red is perfectly plain in calicos," she answered. "Well, let me see some." "We haven't any turkey red calico left," she said, "but we have some very nice plain calicos in other colors." "I don't want any other color. I want cloth to go with this." "It's hard to find low-cost calico like that," she said, and so I left her. I next went into a store a few doors up the street. I gave a salesman my sample and asked, "Have you any calico like this?"
"Yes, sir," said he. "Third counter to the right."
I went to the third counter to the right. A man there looked at my sample on both sides. Then he said, "We haven't any of this." "I was told you had," said I.
"We had it, but we're out of it now. You'll get that from an upholsterer, someone who recovers furniture."
I went across the street to the upholsterer's store. "Have you anything like this?" I asked.
"No," said the man. "We haven't. Is it for furniture?"
"Yes," I answered.
"Then turkey red is what you want."
"Is turkey red just like this?" I asked.
"No," said he, "but it's much better." "That makes no difference to me," I said. "I want something just like this." "But they don't use that for furniture," he said. "I should think people could use anything they wanted for furniture," I said, somewhat sharply. "They can, but they don't," he said calmly. "They don't use red like that. They use turkey red." I said no more, but left. The next place I visited was a very large store. Of the first salesman I saw, I asked if they sold red calico like my sample. "You'll find that on the second floor," said he. I went up the steps. There, I asked a man, "Where will I find red calico?" "In the far room to the left, over there," and he pointed to a distant corner. I walked through the crowds of purchasers and salespeople, and around the counters and tables filled with goods, to the far room to the left. When I got there, I asked for red calico. "The second counter down this side," said the man. I went there and produced my sample. "Calicos are downstairs," said the man. "They told me they were up here," I said. "Not these plain goods. You'll find them downstairs at the back of the store over on that side." I went downstairs to the back of the store. "Where will I find red calico like this?" I asked.
"Next counter but one," said the man, walking with me in the direction he pointed out. "Dunn, show this man red calicos."
Mr. Dunn took my sample and looked at it. "We haven't this shade in that quality of goods," he said.
"Well, do you have it in any quality of goods?" I asked.
"Yes, we've got it finer."
And he took down a piece of calico and unrolled a meter or two of it on the counter.
"That's not this shade," I said.
"No," said he. "It is finer, and the color is better."
"I want it to match this," I said.
"I thought you didn't care about the match," said the salesman. "You said you didn't care for the quality of the goods. You know, you can't match goods unless you take into consideration quality and color both. If you want that quality of goods in red, you ought to get turkey red."
I did not think it necessary to answer this comment, but said, "Then you've got nothing like this."
"No, sir, but perhaps they may have it in the upholstery department on the sixth floor."
So I got in the elevator and went to the sixth floor. "Have you any red material like this?" I said to a young man.
"Red material? Upholstery department, other end of this floor."
I went to the other end of the floor. "I want some red calico," I said to a man.
"Furniture goods?" he asked.
"Yes," said I.
"Fourth counter to the left."
I went to the fourth counter to the left and showed my sample to a salesman. He looked at it and said,
"You'll get this down on the first floor, calico department."
I went down in the elevator and out on the street. I was completely sick of red calico, but I decided to make one more effort. My wife had bought her red calico not long before, and there must be some to be had somewhere. I should have asked her where she got it, but I thought a simple little thing like that could be bought anywhere. I went into another large store. As I entered the door, a sudden nervousness took hold of me. I just could not take out that piece of red calico again. If I had had any other kind of cloth,
I think I would have asked them if they could match that. But I stepped up to a young woman and presented my sample with the usual question. "Back room, counter on the left," she said. I went there. "Have you any red calico like this?" I asked the saleswoman. "No, sir," she said, "but we have it in turkey red." "Turkey red again!" I surrendered. "All right," I said. "Give me turkey red." "How much, sir?" she asked. "I don't know. Say 15 meters. She looked at me strangely, but measured off 15 meters of turkey red calico. Then she touched the counter and called out, "Cash." A young girl with yellow hair appeared. The woman wrote the number of meters, the name of the goods, her own number, the price, and the amount of money I gave her on a piece of paper. She probably wrote some other things, like the color of my eyes and the direction and speed of the wind. She then copied all this into a little book. Then she gave the piece of paper, the money, and the turkey red cloth to the yellow-haired girl. This girl copied the information into a little book she carried. Then she went away with the calico, the paper, and the money. After a very long time, the girl came back, bringing the money I was owed and the package of turkey red calico. I returned to my office, but had time for very little work the rest of the day. When I reached home, I gave the package of calico to my wife. She opened it and declared, "Why, this doesn't match the piece I gave you." "Match it," I cried. "Oh, no, it doesn't match it. You didn't want that matched. You were mistaken. What you wanted was turkey red, third counter to the left." I mean, turkey red is what they use. My wife looked at me in surprise, and then I told her my troubles. "Well," said she, "this turkey red is much nicer looking than what I had. You've got so much of it that I don't have to use the other at all. I wish I had thought of turkey red before." "I wish, from the bottom of my heart, you had," said I.
A Piece of Red Calico was written by Frank Stockton. It was adapted by Shelley Gollist and produced by LaJuan Davis. Your storyteller was Steve Ember. You can read and listen to other American stories on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Bob Doty.